Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, the myth, the legend, the man himself, Neil Kulon.
As always, it's great to be here, especially after an intro like that. How could I not want to come back each week?
That's why we come up with intros like this, because we need to keep reeling you in.
That's all I need. It's just my ego. You massage that a bit, and I'll do whatever you want. I'm easy.
I mean, really, it's you know, it's been perfected with management over the years. I mean, none of it's sincere. All right. So, obviously, the dramatic moment. Mitch Trubisky is one. Kenny Pickett is two. Is there really, really any surprise in this at all?
I don't really. I wouldn't even call it a surprise.
No, of course not.
My thought on this, we've discussed this too. My thought really was, now that you're in the situation, now that you have Mitch Trubisky signed, you still are if you want to keep Mason Rudolph, you drafted Kenny Pickett. Whatever order you want to put him in, I'm not sure how much it's going to matter. And I don't know if there is so much of a wrong decision here. I think Trubisky is the starter. I think that's the right decision to make. I can see positives and negatives to either Rudolph or Pickett serving as the game day backup. Now, what this really means is it's the quarterback who's going to be dressed. And you only are going to dress two, which is what Mike Tomlin said today. There are only going to be two of them dressing. I would have thought keeping Rudolph at $3 million, the value to that would be more of having an in-game quarterback ready to help with signaling, to help with diagnosing defenses, looking at screenshots, things like that. Things that a veteran would probably be able to do better than a rookie. I would think that would have more value. But at the same time, every quarterback in the league has zero experience until they get on the field. There's a time where they're not prepared to be in the spot that they're in. That's just a fact. If they want to accelerate Pickett's timeline, probably because they want him to start next season, this is a good way to do that. So I that makes sense too. I don't know if the world ends if Mitch Trubisky gets hurt anyway, and I'm not sure if either Rudolph or Pickett are significantly better than one or the other. For me, in that situation, I'd probably rather go with Pickett over a 2-3-4 game stretch. I'd want the rookie, the future, to get his reps. In game, I think Rudolph might be the better option just because he's done it. He's already prepared to do it. He knows what to expect. I'd be okay with that. But I just spent 2.5 minutes talking about something that I don't think significantly matters. I've had issues with quarterback depth that they have in this team anyway. They have a couple guys, I don't know how good any of them are with the Steelers right now. We've seen Rudolph. I don't know what he's like within this variation of the offense. We have not seen Trubisky or Pickett in real time. We'll see what happens here, but this isn't a position of strength. Let's be realistic here. I don't think we need to be hooking our plows to the futures, for the Steelers' future's sake on the quarterback room right now. So whatever combination of them they want to put out there, I'm sure it's going to have a few pluses and probably the negatives that we already know about.
Well, that's okay, because I spent 32 seconds asking a question that I knew it was going to be that kind of answer anyway. So, in some way, Neil, in college football, which obviously I get the privilege of broadcasting, the opening game has some level of mystery to it because you don't play anything until you play the first game. You just start. The way preseasons play out in the NFL now, is it actually trending more in that direction?
How about this? Ask me that next week.
Okay.
Here's the issue that I have. And a lot of this stems not just from this, but this is definitely the best example. The Steelers going to Buffalo last year and playing the most ridiculous game you've ever seen.
Yeah.
That season up to that point, there would be several more that were worse. But Pittsburgh had no business beating Buffalo. They play 10 times. Pittsburgh probably loses 7 of 10.
Yeah.
That's a significant advantage at the NFL level of this sport. Buffalo played a terrible game, and it showed when they basically ran over just about everybody else the rest of the way of their season. Pittsburgh got a special teams play and a lot of poor offense on both sides of the ball, and they were able to kind of hang on in a game they shouldn't have won. Week one, to me, is more of where this all is. You're right in what you're asking and where that's going. You don't know about a team. The preseason, I don't think, is all that much different than week one is. And we're seeing that more and more. It's maybe this is just my ears are perked up ever since, you know, contact was even more limited. I think that was two CBAs ago. But it just seems like there's massive variation in several games every year in week one. Now, in the NFL, you know how it is. They're not, you know, we're not seeing 7+ point game spreads all that often. It's not rare, but you're not getting more than one, maybe two of those a week. Teams are generally speaking fairly close, you know, barring injuries and everything like that.
Right.
In week one, though, it seems like we're totally dead set on this team winning this game, and they'll get blown out. And then they'll come back the next week and destroy whoever they're playing. There's so much variation in the first one, two, three games of an NFL season. It just kind of feels almost like they aren't really planning on it. Whatever their master plan is, it's taking effect as they're going. They're not warming up to it yet. I view week one like that. I really don't know. I mean, we can go off what we see today. It just doesn't seem like that happens in line the way that it will in week two, week three, and beyond, if that makes sense. I mean, teams just don't seem at their best in week one. It really feels like a preseason game. They're warming up. It's not quite as intense as we'll see in the coming weeks.
Yeah, I think college football, like the NFL, to me, the similarity now is at the end of month one, now you got a pretty good read on where you're actually headed. I think, you know, it takes about 4 weeks where you really know, what do I have? What don't I have? How do I work around it? How do I make everything else pay off? I think after a month, you've got that.
Yeah, you've got to be able to see it. I think that's what I mean. People tend to think that you're hitting the ground knowing everything that you're doing, whereas more it's, you know, in other words, a heavyweight fight, you're not coming out throwing haymakers in round one necessarily.
Right.
You're going to jab, you're going to move around, you're going to see what your opponent looks like that particular day. And I think being able to see your opponent on film more, to understand their tendencies a little bit more, you're able to ramp up your preparation to a higher degree as the season goes on. But in week one, it feels like neither team is really going for anything right away. Like the missing spot in that, to me, it feels like it's the preparation piece. They don't know enough. You can go back and look at what a team did last season for sure. Right now, though, if you're Lou Amoretto with the Bengals, if you're Zach Taylor with the Bengals, are you going to actively prepare for a Steelers offense with Mitch Trubisky under center? How do you intend to do that by watching Ben play last year?
Right.
They're polar opposite quarterbacks.
Right.
So are you going to be able to really spot tendencies and figure out what it is that you need to do based on their film from last year? Because in a lot of ways, and I'll be honest with you, I'll speak until the sun comes up tomorrow about how Cincinnati is going to win this game. But one real trick to this, Zach Taylor doesn't know a whole lot of what to prepare for, whereas the Steelers didn't just get two big-time beatings from the Bengals last year, front row seats to what they're doing. They got to watch four other games of the Bengals at the end of last season. So there's a bit more film on a team that's got a little bit more continuity going for it. To some degree, that might give the Steelers something of an advantage just in terms of preparation. But if Zach Taylor's worth his salt, he's not going to go back and do the same exact thing, certainly not against an opponent that knows him pretty well. So the preparation piece just kind of seems to almost create it really a stalemate of sorts in the week one portion of the schedule. But over the first quarter of the season, that fades away, I think, pretty quickly as the weeks go on. You get more film, you get more prep, and you figure out your own team as well to kind of put those two things together and start coming up with who your team really is, which, as much as they say this is true, it just isn't. You don't know who it is in July. You know it in October and November, but you don't know it in July.
I mean, what's interesting about college football, it's a week-by-week evaluation. Same thing with the NFL, week-by-week. That's why I always refer to, after the opening weekend in college football, I always refer to it on this show as Overreaction Tuesday. Like, you didn't learn much of anything really over the weekend from anybody, you know, except somebody won, somebody lost, because there's no real feel yet on how teams really are. And and of course, in this business, we'll get to Tuesday next week, and you know, you and I won't overreact to it. That's not what we do, but we'll ask questions about it. But there'll be people after week one of the NFL overreacting. Oh, Chargers, that's it. They're home free. Nope, the Chargers, they're in the tank. They'll never win.
Yep, you hear, last year was a great example of that. Everybody was like, okay, all right, this is the Steelers we thought we were going to see. No.
And the Bills aren't as good.
They're 6.5-point underdogs for a reason. I mean, this game, if you watch it, it's just, I hate to use the word fluke at the NFL level, but that game, there were worse flukes they had during that season, too. 2021 was just a remarkable year for the Steelers in so many ways. You've heard me. I've said it on this segment. That was the worst Steelers team we've seen in 20 years.
Yeah.
And they managed to not lose 10 games last year. It doesn't make any sense, but I think Bills coming due here. You know, landlord's on the prowl right now. I'm not sure if they can get away with that again. We'll see. I wouldn't bet against Mike Tomlin all that often, but I'm not sure how this team, I don't think they beat Cincinnati week one. And I think that's going to show probably a little bit earlier this year, as opposed to last year, the true colors of this team.
How interesting is it going to be for you to see how Mike wants to play, because that's the best way he thinks it is to win, because there's so many unknowns about this team.
That's the thing. Mike Tomlin, clearly, he forgot more football in the last 15 seconds than you and I combined will ever know.
That's right.
I'm not disparaging him at all.
Nope.
I'm looking at this intellectually. I don't know he knows who this team is. I think he knows who the individual players are.
Right.
But how do you know your team if you have never played a regular season game with your quarterback? How could you possibly know who you are? You know what you want. You know what you're after. But that's not going to be the makeup of the team. You have to figure out on the fly. And that's you know, not just week to week. That's half to half, quarter to quarter, series to series. You have to find out what they can do consistently when the pads are thumping. It's not a video game. You can't just call the play and expect the other team to do exactly what you want them to do. It's adjusting on the fly, not in the locker room. So to learn all of that, you have to pay attention to everything that's going on, and you need live examples. You need failure to figure that out. I don't think he knows exactly who they are right now. Again, I think he knows who he wants them to be. And perhaps, you know, his vast expertise in the subject can tell him who they're going to end up. But where they are right now, I don't think any coach can truly know that. It's just a question of putting together what you think their highest and best is and getting ready to adjust one way or another, because it's probably not going to be the same thing after 8 games, after 12 games.
How heavy is Mike with analytics? And how heavy is Mike when it comes to his own gut instinct?
I'll say this. Mike Tomlin does not waste words. When he speaks to the media, there is a purpose in everything that he is saying.
No question.
And he will touch on that subject to a point. But if you notice, you listen to him, if you listen to every interview and presser that he's done, you'll notice that there kind of comes a point where he stops being specific about something. We often want to think that that's because he doesn't know or he's not aware of it. I don't think there's anything that happens in an organization that Mike Tomlin isn't aware of.
I agree.
He's just not that type.
That's right. I agree with that.
An extremely type A, detail-oriented, intelligent guy. I think he knows what he needs, but more than anything, he knows the advantage of not tipping his hand. We saw just in training camp, oh, by the way, your star running back who's going to get 400 carries has a Lisfranc sprain. It's an injury that's going to keep him out in minimum 4 weeks. And it's at the 4 week mark, and now he's out here practicing. Wow, he missed all that time as well. He didn't say boo about it. Didn't right. say a word. Why? He didn't have to.
Right.
Mike Tomlin doesn't need to speak on these topics for him to be doing it. We don't have time to dive into it, but I'll tell you offline sometime. Go back even to the Jarvis Jones disaster.
Mm-hmm.
The draft Jarvis Jones, what, 17 or 13 overall? I always forget for some reason. 17, right? 17 overall.
17.
Okay. The Steelers used to get starting outside linebackers in the third round. All right. Somehow Joey Porter turned into Jarvis Jones in the first round.
Yeah.
Huge mistake in many ways. And I'm not trying to be that guy, but I even said it at the time. This guy is just not that kind of athlete. He just isn't. I don't care what the temperature was at his pro day. He's not that fast. You can tell he's not very explosive. He's not a twitchy kind of guy. To me, it was such a dereliction of what they do, what they're looking for, that it inspired a significant change in their drafting philosophy the next year. I don't think that they just got more perceptive of who is a better athlete. I think they started using analytics to show that in a more discernible, more objective way than just what they're watching. Clearly, there was differing opinions on the athletic ability and therefore the potential of a guy like Jarvis Jones. So all due respect to Jarvis Jones. He's a very nice guy. I hope he's doing very well, but he's just not an NFL caliber athlete. And nobody today would think that he is. The Steelers went with the production or, you know, what they think they saw on film over the measurements, over what he tested as an athlete. And it was a massive mistake. And it was clear and obvious right away. The guy plays hard. He's a good teammate. He is just not even close to he's not even close to enough athlete to play an edge linebacker position in the NFL successfully. The next year, if you look at who they drafted, all of them were high-level athletes.
Right.
Ryan Shazier is one of the most athletic guys who ever tested.
Yep.
As far as what we know in the NFL. Martavis Bryant, a height, weight, speed god. He had it all. Huge, huge high-level athlete. Dree Archer, terrible football player. Great athlete.
Yep.
They made a point to draft these highly athletic players that had the athleticism and size. And it wasn't so much about their production on the field. It was how good of athletes they were. And, you know, call that 1A versus 1B. They need to be, you know, a certain level of player, the exception of Dree Archer, apparently.
Yeah.
Not sure what they saw there. But from that point on, we've started to see them go in a much more athletic direction. They want to find athletes as well as football players. I know that sounds simple, but how do you define an athlete? Is it what John over here says, or is it what Brad says? Who knows an athlete more? It's not necessarily just something you can watch. You need to create some type of baseline. There's a lot of ways to do that. And my guess, and I'll never get this on the record from anybody, and I'm being honest, I don't know. My guess is they brought in people to answer that question between the 2013 and 2014 season.
Right.
From then on, I think they have gone with that kind of analytics when it comes to their draft evaluations, because they've taken much more of the athletes that we aren't sure about as players. Terrell Edmonds, Artie Burns. These are guys that athletically will grade out probably better than their film. They took them in the first round because they want to invest in athletes. T.J. Watt, I know it seems crazy right now, but T.J. Watt went 30 overall for a reason. And it's not because he's a future Hall of Fame player. It's he didn't have really enough tape to get a good sense of who he was, but he tested as a great athlete. They went with him. Things like that. That's a very long way of answering your question, but I think they absolutely do, and I think they absolutely will not talk about it either because they don't like other people knowing what they're doing.
Well, that's okay. I would tell people what I was doing, but I don't even know. All right, so Neil, appreciate you so much. Look forward to a lack of overreaction next Tuesday.
Definitely. Thanks for having me, guys.